Good morning, everybody. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for being here this morning to share this time with us. This is my first APHA convention, and it's pretty overwhelming, the amount of opportunities to see and do and listen. So I really appreciate you all being here today. Hopefully, first of all, I want to give credit to my colleagues. Very interesting topics. And actually, I didn't realize until I saw you were from JMU, my oldest daughter and my grandchildren live right in Harrisonburg. So I've seen JMU. It's a beautiful facility, and the hospital is just gorgeous down there. So very nice area to be at. I'll have to tell her that I sat by someone from right down where she lives. So anyway, my name again is Amy Vance. I am from the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. Someone pointed out to me, make sure you say the city because there is a Cleveland, Tennessee. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Cleveland Clinic, but we're kind of known for our world-class health care. Have been the number one provider over 17 years, I think, now 17 or 18. So we're pretty proud of that. But one little-known secret at the clinic is that we have some very passionate individuals interested in community health and the health of the community. Actually, people in the clinic don't know a lot of times that we exist, and so we're very happy to be here today to talk. I run a small clinic in an urban part of downtown Cleveland. We service primarily low-income to unemployed individuals, a lot of single parents, primarily African-American population. The typical things that you would see, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, is the challenges that we see. We do a lot of screenings there. We do have a nurse practitioner that comes one day a week who is my boss and director. And do a lot of education, a lot of classes. We hold free exercise classes, yoga, nutrition classes. So we're really trying to hit the two big initiatives that the clinic feels will impact public health in the future, and that's smoking and obesity, because just about everything that we battle with in public health can tie back to those two things. So co-presenting with me is Dr. Mary Beth Zini. She has been a mentor and has been a great help for me in developing this. I want to say that I am not an expert in what you're going to hear. I'm about a year into using what I'm going to show you, and I hope that you can take this away and hopefully utilize it to implement in the areas that you will return back to. So let me go ahead and say that neither one of us have any personal financial relationships to disclose. And I will let Dr. Mary Beth take it from here.
Right, that's fine. I'm from an evaluative research background in public health. We all know the prevalence data regarding chronic conditions. You can read these on your own. And Amy's program deals with self-management issues of chronic illness with the clients that she sees. So we are dealing with a vulnerable population, expected increases, of course, in the urgent needs that we're seeing and the comorbidities. And this is a community-based intervention of health and wellness initiative that was coined by Amy, and the acronym is up there too on which we will present today. And a little bit about the background is that, as I said before, it's a self-care management initiative to address the issues we are seeing, and it's a partnership with community agencies also. Our theoretical framework, which if you come out of an evaluative research framework, it's your program theory. And we're looking at on an interpersonal level, the social cognitive theory, individual level, health belief model, in order to empower people to make the changes needed. And so Amy does meet with people on a very regular basis. So that was really the driving force behind tracking then outcomes to determine if the initiative made a difference or an impact, in addition to process evaluation aspects too. And it was all based on needs assessment data, obviously. And the research question at hand, what were the processes to develop and implement a REDCap data registry for community-based health interventions. And Amy will tell you more about REDCap and what it means and possible application to the public health arena.
So can I see by a show of hands anyone that has heard of or utilizes REDCap?
Yay!
All right, well, I welcome any impact or any insight from you all when we're done as well. Like I said, I discovered this about this time last year and was really excited. As we all, I think, coming into public health, I've been a nurse for many years, and actually from my nursing experience, I learned that I wanted to go upstream and try to catch people earlier in their life, and so got into public health. And so in our small setting, we actually, when we talk about community partners, there are a couple of programs that we have been trained in at the clinic, and these are the community partners that I speak of. One is through Stanford University. They have a chronic disease self-management program. And through Fairhill Partners, which is a agency on aging facility in Cleveland, they became master trainers, and then we, probably about 20 of us throughout the Cleveland Clinic system, took this training and then are able to be facilitators for a six-week program that they offer. The piece that I was interested in exploring was, does it make a change in the behavior of people? We always know that we can measure education, and if we're lucky enough, we can measure it over time to be sure it sticks. But you know, our big question in public health is always, did it help them change their behavior? And so Stanford had measures that looked at decreasing emergency room visits and typical self-care knowledge type of measures. But we weren't really looking at, you know, did they lose weight? Did their blood pressure change? Was their cholesterol levels improved? So I began to think about how we could track those kind of things at a baseline and then at intervals, a couple intervals up to a year follow-up, because I really wanted to prove, since we don't charge for our services, and I guess at any moment with budget cuts and stuff, we always have this hanging over our head, we're not revenue producing in my department, so we want to really show that we're worth keeping around. So I was looking for a way that I could begin to track that, not just at our facility, but across the Cleveland Clinic system. There's probably about five to seven other community outreach departments. Ours is only about four nurses, a social worker, and a couple other people, one with an MBA. So we aren't a big department for main campus. The regional ones are even smaller, and not always do they have a nurse in them. A lot of times marketing has kind of taken over, and they do more marketing for programs and talks and things, so we're challenged that way. But I wanted to be able to try to pull data from a system, so I was looking for something that would be available that could be accessed, you know, ultimately by anyone in the system, could enter data, we could set up the measurements that we wanted to, the different biometrics, and be able to show and track outcomes for our programs, not just the one through Stanford. And another one that I have to mention is a collaboration with Canyon Ranch Institute. We do a life enhancement program, and they offer that in a pay per person. Probably many of us could not afford to go out there, but the founder of that that program had a real passion to bring it to the underserved and people that would otherwise not be able to fly out and be a part of that. And so that is another program that we offer free to the communities that we serve. And so even that program, wanting to compare across programs, looking at at similar kinds of data, but looking, is there a difference between those that go through the Stanford self-management program versus the life enhancement program? What about people that just come exercise twice a week with us and maybe hit a nutrition class once a month? What about those that just come to see me or another nurse and have individual one-on-one health coaching? Our smoking cessation programs, there are those that are in that program, do they end up, you know, there's just so many ways we can look at statistics if And so I was wanting to find something that I could capture and really evaluate things in a deeper way that we really had never been able to before. So the sample that we used were participants that they had to be 18 years of age or older, and they had to take part in any group or individual educational or behavioral intervention that we provided through community outreach in my location or any setting across the system. And of course, we needed to have their consent, which was a whole other process. So this was an IRB-approved process to set up this database. We already had individuals that had consented to be a part of the services at our center. What we needed to do was reconsent everybody, because we had about 2 years of data that we were really interested in going back and pulling from so we could continue on prospectively. And so that involved reconsenting and sending out consents to people with a new additional, you know, could we use your data, and this is what we would use, do we have your permission? So that was a challenge, and we just had another addendum approval, because I didn't think to say, well, those, not everyone's going to respond immediately, or they won't respond at all. So now we are recalling and sending people additional consents. So that's been a learning thing as well. So REDCap actually stands for Research Electronic Data Capture. It is a secure application that is available on the internet, and people can log in and enter data at multiple intervention sites. It is encrypted, so your data is very secure. It is designed to put research data in, though there's other applications. And again, if someone puts data in at a site out in the west side of Cleveland, that'll be immediately available, and there's a way to look at data trail audits. I can see who put in what. If we have a grad student that we train that is putting in data, it will actually link back everything that they put in, so I can see if we're having an issue with any particular data entry person. And then this data actually can be exported out to many of the common statistical package software programs that we're familiar with. It was developed by a multi-institutional consortium, which includes the Cleveland Clinic, initiated at Vanderbilt University, so they're the ones that started this whole ball rolling. The program that I'm speaking to you about was a collaboration with Health Sciences at the Cleveland Clinic. They've been very instrumental in helping us as we develop this database and set up the behind-the-scenes stuff in it. And again, I did say it was IRB approved. So the methods involve data collection and entry, again, occurring at simultaneous outreach sites. Right now, I'm kind of it, because, like I said, some of the outreach sites are a person, you know, a staff of one, and they just do not have the time right now. So all this retrospective data entry and collection, I am kind of spearheading until I can get out and train them. There is a capability that I have not used yet, that you can actually send. There's just been a recent upgrade of REDCap, and you can send a link by email to participants, and they can fill out the surveys that you want, and it'll dump back into the data registry, which is wonderful. So that is a brand new feature. I mentioned the kind of data that we are collecting and interested in.
Okay. Just very briefly, our quantitative health sciences group, our REDCap division, put together a comparison slide for you to see regarding REDCap versus what's capable in Excel. And you can see the difference on your own and read the differences. As Amy mentioned before, the audit trail and secure storage aspects and web-based are really strong features compared to Excel.
So just to kind of take you through a couple of the website pages, this is kind of the initial website. You can get to it by just typing and Googling REDCap, and you can see that I think if, I don't know if this is most recent because it seems like there's always someone else coming into the consortium, but I think that says what? 21,840 studies, over 30,000 end users. So there's right now 271 active institutional partners. Yours may be one of them. So you can click on here and see a very long, extensive list of people that are using REDCap, and that's from hospital to university settings, just all across the world, actually. So I'm going to kind of take you through how I went through and started this project. So basically, I found out that the Cleveland Clinic was already a user of REDCap, so I just needed to, actually it requires an IRB approved study. So that was the first step, going through and getting permission and getting IRB approval. I was able to set up, but they just were not able to go live with my REDCap database until I had IRB approval. So this is when you're first starting up your project. You just very, very user friendly. I have a fair amount of internet skills and but I will tell you that you need not be afraid of this system. It is very, very intuitive. You can see where you choose what kind of a design project that you're wanting to set up, and you hit create, and boom, it happens. Now these are some of the forms. This is on the form page where you go on into the online designer and you can very easily create a form. I will show you the next screen, but these are some of the forms that we created. They look just like pretty much the form that the participant would fill out in a hard copy. So it makes it very easy if you do want to have either a station in your clinic where they can do it, or you can now send an online email link. Or we will have them, what we have been doing, they fill out the paperwork and then one of us goes in and just completes the form. So this is kind of the data collection instruments, some of them we're using. If I was wanting to go ahead and set up a question, this is the first, this is where I would add a field to the type of question. You can see that you have many choices of what kind of question you would like to ask. So you just go through and you click on the field, the type of question you would like. And then behind the scenes, you type in your question in the field label. You set up the choices. You can set up your variable name. You even can check whether it's a required field, where they cannot go on to complete the next question unless they answer that. A lot of this stuff on the right, the bottom, I don't always use, but it does allow you a lot of choices in setting up your fields. So I click complete, and here's my question. As you can see, the green arrow there will allow me to do branching logic. So let's say that it's someone that's 18 years old. I'm not going to ask them a female. I'm not going to ask them the next question about, do they get their prostate checked, So there is a way that you can skip over based on the demographics of that person and kind of streamline the questionnaire for them if you're doing it online. And this is kind of a completed form. You can see all these questions. It would take you literally maybe 30 minutes if you're a newbie to go through and create an online survey. And the other nice thing about this is there's a scheduling feature. So you can set up, as you can see, this was my kind of my standard protocol. We do a pre-assessment before a class, then a post-assessment after the class. We do a 3 and 9 month phone call, which you can download, you can scan your form into the computer. There's not a qualitative evaluation piece in REDCap, but at least we have all the data there for us to look at once we're done, and then our you can change the times and modify and create and print off a patient's schedule right from the beginning, so they have that and they can save the date, so to speak. So our findings, it helped us to organize data needed for internal reporting. Like I said, we want to keep our jobs, so we're hoping that this will really help us to even dig deeper. Even on an individual level, it will help in assisting individual interventions and progress made. And like I said, it will generate a personal schedule that we enter into our Epic system then as well, so we're not missing follow-up appointments with people because that can become quite tedious to keep track of. It assisted us in asserting intervention fidelity, making sure, you know, now we're making people accountable in the region. So, you know, you didn't do your six-month follow-up. I mean, it's really helping us to pull this in much tighter than it was prior. Not all participants have consented to have their data entered. Okay, and I guess my time's up. But you can see the findings and the limitations. In our summary, 50 to date, and like I said, hopefully we'll be back next year to give you some real data analysis. We're just beginning, so thank you for your time.
Okay. So one last call. Is Don Middleton in the crowd? No? Okay, so we have about 29, 28 minutes or so for questions and answers. So,
yeah. I have a question for you, Noel. In the UK, they have a series of collaborations called the Clark Initiative. And I can never remember what the acronym is for. But it's tying the healthcare sector to university departments. And one of the troubles that they're running into is that there are very different incentives for academic researchers and practitioners. And although they like to, you know, they're producing good scholarship and all of that, they're not making quite the difference in practice that they were hoping, or at least they don't feel like they are. I wondered how you're addressing that problem in your collaboration, because it sounds like it's working very well.
Did everyone hear the question? No? Okay, so to summarize, the question is incentives for academics and incentives for the clinical side, and how does that impact the outcomes?
Right.
Pretty much?
Okay. And why does it work for us? We are focused on not only health outcomes, but all kinds of outcomes. You saw wetlands remediation. Recently, we had a very explicit conversation in our steering team about differing incentives for the academic world. And that particular conversation focused on grants, because we are looking at some joint grant opportunities and publications that can result. So we all acknowledge that. That's part of our open communication. We acknowledge that there are differing incentives, differing rewards. The importance of scholarship at a university is different than that at a community hospital. So we acknowledge those differences. And what we have found in our steering team and in the individuals involved in various initiatives is that there's a lot of respect for that. So we talk about the fact that the hospital is now going to need to engage in some grant activity and a community assessment that they haven't done in the past on their own. And we're interested in similar kind of assessment. So how can we pair up? We have a lot of conversation about this. I think that's how it's successful. How can we pursue this jointly so that both benefit? And we focus on outcomes. Our care initiatives are focused on the outcomes for patients and potential patients in the community. Does that answer your question?
As well as they could. They try the same thing there, and it doesn't seem to be working as well, from the feedback I've heard.
Okay. Emily.
I think that speaks to a couple of issues that we've dealt with in the partnership, and that's speaking a common language, finding and respecting differing priorities, and then institutional buy-in at the highest levels. What we've tried to do at the celebrations is to acknowledge people in ways that are meaningful to them. An example would be our sort of the ongoing celebration, are some of our evidence-based practice initiatives that were really bedside-generated. Clinical nurses had clinical questions that they wanted to have answered. That was affirmed and celebrated by hospital administration. What happened then is that clinical nurses who didn't have ready access to tools in evidence-based practice, contacted and partnered with nurses in the Department of Nursing and others, and generated some meaningful work that resulted in changed clinical practice. And of course, at our celebration, that was acknowledged. It's now being, other partners are being brought in, and work on publishing data is underway. So that's one example.
That's it just occurred to me another thing that's probably very important is the dean is part of it.
Absolutely.
And so it counts for tenure and promotion,
yes.
As opposed to in many places where the leadership might not be. They go to look at the list of publications, it's not as impressive as it otherwise would be, and you're really focused on those outcomes. I think that's important.
That's absolutely correct, and I'll just say something else real briefly. At our institution, and especially in my college, there's a lot of emphasis on and support for interdisciplinary and interprofessional work, so this kind of effort really is evaluated positively in annual reviews and for promotion and tenure.
Yes, next question.
Thank you. REDCap is usually more traditionally used in clinical medicine with, you know, clinical studies at regional medical centers, perinatal centers. And I noticed there's some audience members that are familiar with REDCap. Would you mind sharing, if I'm not putting you on the spot, regarding how you use REDCap? And
I'm actually at one of those, I'm at Rockefeller University, we're a biomedical research institution, and we're also a CTSA awardee, similar as Vanderbilt is. So Vanderbilt, at one of our, that's probably like the first consortium meeting, introduced REDCap as an option, a tool for protocols to collect data and analyze data. So a lot of our protocols at Rockefeller utilize REDCap for their research studies.
Okay, so you're really not using it in the community health type center is what I'm saying.
No, we're not a community health center.
Okay, great. Anyone else? Yes.
So we're just about embarking on utilizing REDCap. Actually, I know that you said in Maryland, and we're actually partnering with our Title V agency at the State Health Department, and we're working on a project looking at an evaluation system and template for the local health departments and for some grantees in that specific Title V agency. So we haven't seen, or actually haven't, when I looked through all the partners, really haven't seen any use of REDCap in community public health agencies, but it does seem like it may meet our needs, at least for us to get started. So I was very interested in, you know, hearing that you guys are kind of taking the step and moving in that direction. So we actually just had our first partner meeting last week, so we're in the very, very beginning stages.
Oh, good, thanks.
Okay. Next question or comments? No. So it looks like we're ready for lunch and coffee, perhaps.